Someone flips on one of those lights there in the back, if you would for me, please, one of the men. People who've got a Bible might not be able to see it very good. There you go. That'll help some. In the book of Mark, the sixth chapter, Mark is a unique book just within itself. Even when you read the book of Mark, it's kind of an odd book because the chapters in it and everything is so bang, 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 bang. It's not really like John or Luke or even Matthew. It doesn't do a lot of historical. In fact, when you just jump into the book of Mark, it just goes right straight into miracles and right straight into Jesus' ministry. But I want you to understand, Mark was written to the Romans, and it was designed to help the early Roman church, those that were in the time of Nero, and those that were at a time where great persecution and trials, and I mean, they were having their friends basically barbecued on steaks, and it was a bad season. And Mark is writing a book that tries to not only give you the understanding that God is in control, that everything is working according to God's plan, but it is so much about learning how to and the way to get to Jesus and to interact with Jesus. That's the reason it has the story of Jairus' daughter. It has the story of the man that was in Gennesaret and living in the tombs. It has the story of the lady with the issue of blood. It has the story of different people who interacted with him. The powerful miracles that basically came about not because Jesus had the power, but because people recognized that Jesus had the power. And this morning I want to deal with, in this Mark, the sixth chapter, and as you go to about verse 30 will be a good place to start, and we'll just kind of have a good thought outline to kind of go into this. I want to deal with this subject this morning. It just takes a little. It just takes a little. In our lives, what we are prone to do is we like something and then we just gobble it up. We just get overwhelmed with it. And then we become weak in other areas of our life. If we fall in love, man, I'm telling you, we forget everything and anything, and we're just concentrated on the love of our life. And we start spending all our money there, and we start doing all that. And it doesn't matter if we pick up fishing, if all of a sudden that becomes our new hobby, man, we go and we start buying more than we can afford, and we start going to boat shows, and we start looking around, and we start looking at items that we know we can't afford, but we need that. We've got to have that. And all of a sudden in our lives, we are prone to be that way. We are prone to get out of balance real quick. Look at the person beside you and say, "Do you ever get out of balance?" We're prone to do that. We're prone to find something we like and then just eat it until we get sick of it. We're prone to it. It's not enough for us just to get a little something if it's an ice cream flavor we like. It isn't enough for us just to go get some of it. We got to buy a gallon of it. And we've got to sit there until we literally eat it every time. We don't get no other kind of ice cream until it's just to the point where I don't want to look at it no more. I get that way about things. It's easy in our lives because when we find something we like, we think that's going to answer for everything else. That's going to fix all the other things. There's some of you that got married in that same mindset. That's what got you down to an altar. You kept thinking, if I could just find him or find her, I'm telling you, then my loneliness will go away, and then I have somebody to hang out with, and then didn't quite solve every problem in your life, did it? Probably even created one or two new ones. Well, that's the same way it is in the Bible. God is trying through the book of Mark, especially this sixth chapter, He's trying desperately to teach them how to balance their life. How to be able to receive from God, but not get to such a degree in one degree or another so that your life becomes imbalanced. If I say these words, let me just speak them, and you just kind of think about what it says to you. If I say grief, despair, loneliness, stress, family problems, financial problems, job pressures. If I start just listing those things and start mentioning them, it doesn't take very long for the mood of this whole room to change. For everybody to get quiet, for everybody Because in our lives, we think that somehow that's different or separated from this relationship with God. And here we get to have the real life. But really, in fact, in here, this is not the real life. This is the life that one day we will have in heaven when all this other stuff is taken away. This is a glimpse of what real life will be like one day. Won't it be great when we all can just worship and have some of the greatest praise leaders and greatest praise people and just singing, and we'll sing right along beside them, and we'll just carry on, and Jesus will be there, and everything will be, and the angels will be there, and I don't know how many instruments or how many new things we haven't even seen that He's got. It's going to be incredible, but that's not now. And Jesus, in this book of Mark, especially this sixth chapter, is illustrated as someone who understands your hurts too. It's more than that just Jesus can do miracles. It's that He understands and He realizes how life has to be balanced. I want to show it to you. In Mark 6, 1 through 6, and you don't have to, but you can mark this down, or when you buy the tape, you'll have it. Mark 6, 1 through 6, you know what happens? Jesus goes back to His hometown. That ought to be an exciting moment. Goes back to His hometown. He's real popular now. He's one of the leading evangelists in the country. But when He arrives, He begins to teach. The people can't get past the fact that He's Mary's boy and Joseph's boy. And didn't He used to fix my door? I mean, didn't He? He was a carpenter, right? The Bible says He could do no great miracles there because of their unbelief. And so even His hometown, He's already going home. And that's important to anybody, to go home and feel accepted, to go home and have somebody say, "You made it, you did good, you've done good." But when Jesus goes home, all He receives from the people that know Him the best is rejection. It doesn't end there. In verses 7 through 13, we see that immediately after this, He sends all of His friends away. He tells the disciples to team up in twos, and He sends them out to test them in ministry, and He gives them power in His name to heal and to deliver and to set free. And so now Jesus is sitting in a lonely place, and He's rejected by His hometown. He's just sent most of His friends away. Now He doesn't have anybody in the evenings to talk to. He doesn't have friends. He doesn't have things going on. And you would think, well, maybe He'll hear some good news and things will go good. But we read the very next part of the Scriptures that go all the way nearly to verse 29. And what do we find out? We find out, yeah, there's news that comes, but it isn't good. We find out that John the Baptist now has been beheaded and been killed. And now Jesus, His cousin, somebody He grew up with, probably played with, probably knew personally, not more than just simply when He was baptized. But Jesus could think back and think, well, there's the guy that baptized me. There's the one that was with me. There's the one that told me I was the anointed. And yet here He is. He's been beheaded and killed. And now my own family's being killed, and now my disciples are out there. Verses 30 through 31. Imagine, just like all of us through all of this, what we need is a vacation. You ever reach that point in your life, you just need a vacation? Just need to turn the phone off, and I just don't need to deal with anything. The disciples come back to Him, and notice verses 30 and 31. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told Him all the things, both which they had done and what they had taught. And Jesus said unto them, "Come ye yourselves apart unto a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to do what?" Jesus said, "Look, let's take a break. I need a vacation. You need a vacation. You guys have done good. Man, you guys have been traveling and going. Let's just find a nice beach somewhere." That's what He says. Let's find a desert place. I don't know about you, but ain't nothing on there but sand. Sounds like a beach to me. And if you're going by boat, you're going to be on the desert water. It's a beach. He could have said it better. Let's find a beach somewhere. So He says, "Guys, let's just get away. Because look, I can't even eat my sandwich in peace. I can't even sit down and have a moment to think. There's people coming and going and coming in at night and sneaking in. Like, we read the one story of Nicodemus, but I'm going to tell you something. There were many Nicodemuses that came to Jesus by night. There were many people that kept coming at all corners and all moments. Anytime they could find Him alone, anytime they could get Him, and anytime they could say, "Could I just talk to you just a minute? Could I speak to you just for a second? Could you just give me 5 minutes? Could you just... This was His life. He's tired. He gets bad news like you do. He gets rejected like you do. And yet He looks and He says, "Look, I'm tired. I know you're tired. Let's just go and let's find us just a good beach. And let's chill out for a while. Let's just quieten it down." This is His life. We like to see Him as just walking around and just barely touching the ground with His sandals. But this is His life. This is how He's able to look at you and say, "Sam, I know what you're going through. I know what it is to hurt. I know what it is to be tired. I know what it is to be discouraged. I know what it is to think nobody cares. I know what it is that all you want is just to sit down and eat your dinner without the phone ringing one time. And I know what it's like that the phone's going to ring every time you try to eat." Could you imagine if He'd had cell phones in His time, if they'd had Twitter, or if Jesus had an email account? It would have blowed up. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. But verse 33 tells us something, and I want you to realize this. There are three things that go hand in hand. Jesus is trying to teach us balance. Verses 30, He's teaching us the balance of rest. Maybe in your life, the reason you can't receive or accept good miracles or godly things is because you can't slow down long enough to charge up enough. Because I want to tell you something about faith. And I'll tell you something about miracles. It takes enormous energy to produce them. It takes enormous energy to produce them. One writer said it this way. He said that preaching a sermon and going through just one service is equivalent to almost 8 to 20 hours of work in one-hour session. Your body is that drained. It takes that long. Just like it takes you a day after you've worked for half a week or whatever, and you come in the evenings, imagine preaching a sermon and then giving and draining, and your faith is drained and your emotions are drained and all this. One of my most important things that Elise does, and if you wonder why I don't eat with a lot of people after church service and stuff, it's because of all the times in my life, that's when I have to be protected the most. That sounds crazy. But usually right after Sunday service, after I've preached twice and I've gone through all this, and my brain is fried. God has done ripped out about everything that I possibly knew and some stuff I just made up along the way. And I'm like, okay. And Elise says, "Let's go get some sweet tea." And so usually if people are eating with me on Sunday or anything, I don't do a lot of talking, a lot of counseling. I don't even like people much at that moment. I'm like, "Where's the beach?" I'm like Jesus at that moment. I'm like, "Let's just get in the boat and let's just go away." Why? Because there's enormous amount of energy that's required. And some of us don't realize that. We think we can just go through our lives and all of a sudden we get a bad news. What usually happens when we're in that pace? It sends us into a free fall. That when that phone call rings and we're tired because we've been working all week and we've been doing all this, and all of a sudden it rings and little Junior's done cut his foot and now we've got to go do stitches and that's going to run $1,000 worth of stitches and everything, and we're just like, "Dad, come on. Here I am trying to do right. Here I am trying to live right. Here I am trying to do everything. And it seems like the more I try, the worse it gets." You know why? Because when you work and you're constantly giving out, and then the bad news comes, you don't have the faith, the energy to be able to handle the next phone call or the next news or the next... That's why I think grandmas are so powerful in your lives. You listen to me. You take advantage of papas and grandmas. You know why? Because they don't do nothing all day. You listen to me. I ain't talking about those still working 40 hours a week. I'm talking about those retired. My grandma. If I call my mama Goodrum right now, if I say, "Mama, I'm having a bad day," she's not going to look at me and say, "Tim, I'm glad you called. I'm having a bad day too." No, my mama sits around most of the time now reading her Bible. She's retired. She goes to the grocery store. She does her... But she spends a lot of time, energy, filling up. And she's just looking and waiting for places to pour out. I remember Sister Walker and others. That they would ask for names. They would say, "Pastor, if you just write those names that you're praying for on a paper, I'll be praying for them next week." There was not a time I'd go over to Sister Walker's house that the Bible wasn't open right there. She wouldn't be sitting in that recliner where she'd spent most of her day, most of her moment. Her fingers were crooked. Everything was gone. But she could still read and she could still pray. She was retired from the work part of life, but she was not retired from the spiritual part of life. Listen to me. You find you people who have energy and time, because those people are loaded with faith. They've went through battles. They've got the ability to pray for you. You're the one out there working 40 hours a week. But you had better have a couple people on speed dial who know that when you call them, they're not too tired for you. They hadn't been working all week. They aren't give out, but they're ready to pour out into your life. You got to have those kind of people. Because if the only people you ever hang out with is tired, irritable people, the only people you ever eat dinner with is tired, irritable people. I'm going to say that right before I get through. Irritable people. It's the tie. It's choking me and I can't get my words out right. If that's the only people you're going to hang out with, if all they're going to talk about is who the president's going to be and how bad the economy is and this and that and gas prices and everything's bad and everything, I'm going to tell you something. It's going to rub off on your faith. It's going to rub off on your life. Before long, then you try to pray. Try to believe God's going to do a miracle when all you're full of is all that negativity and all you're around is negativity. And there's nothing wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to... This is life. But if the only people you are attached to is people that are so busy that they don't rest and they don't have life and they don't have time and energy. In fact, God made it very simple. He said, "Listen, 6 days a week you work. One day you rest. That's Monday for me. I don't care if you're dying. I'm off. I'll send somebody who will pray for you if I get the phone call, which I probably won't, because I won't have the phone probably in my truck charging for Tuesday through Friday." That sounds silly to you. But now what if you meet me Tuesday after I've been wore out on Monday too? And you come up to me and you've got a serious cancer situation. And you've got a problem. You're like, "Pastor, I need you to pray." We're standing right there in the middle of Vowels Marketplace or something. And I look at you and say, "Look, man, I'll be in prayer for you. You be in prayer for me. I'm tired." It's not what you're wanting. You're wanting a smile to come on my face. And you're wanting me to be able to say, "Hey, I believe God right now can heal that person. I believe if me and you hold hands and we pray right now, I believe God will reach down in that hospital and I believe God will heal cancer and make it dry up and go away." That's what you want to hear. But now you can't do that tired. It's no more than a doctor. What if a doctor just came in one day and you're fixing to have my knee surgery and he come walking in that morning and, "Dale, man, I've been rolling for about the last 8 hours. Look, I'm going to try to do this if I can stay awake. If not, my assistant will finish it up." You think I'm excited about that, doctor? What am I going to look at him and say? "Look, why don't you go take a nap? I want you to feel good. I want you to feel refreshed. I want you to be as energized as you possibly can. Because what you're fixing to do is very, very important. And in our lives, we're going to have to learn that before we ever go any further. On our day off, we're going to have to fight for that day off. There's some of you that are going to have to give yourself a day off and fight for that day off. I don't care if you just sit around and do nothing. I don't care if you cleaning the house and working yourself to the bone on another project is not a day off. You're going to have to rest. Bro, Lord, I can't. If your life is so busy that you can't in 6 days get it done, then you don't have a really good life anyway. If you have to work 7 days just to keep up with your life, you ain't really got a life anyway. So in your life, the first thing that Jesus looks at His disciples said, let's go away. Let's rest. I'd like to tell you I'm good at this. I've been spending months, and I'm fixing to spend several more months with different people helping me learn how to rest. I don't do it very well. There's never a shortage of problems. There's never a shortage of needs. There's never a shortage of what needs to be done. There's never a shortage. And it's not easy. You'll have to fight like I'm going to fight just to learn how to be able to just, okay, I'm taking a few hours. I'm going to go fish. Or I'm just going to go sit down. Or I'm going to relax. You're going to have to fight to do it. The second thing that Jesus was teaching them was simply this. Is that when you get proper rest, then all of a sudden you're qualified for service. When you get rest, then you're qualified for service. Your service will mean something. That's what happens in Mark 32 through 44. This is the story of Jesus dealing with the disciples and dealing with everything else. Now, what have the disciples not had time to do yet? Rest. They haven't had time to rest. What has Jesus been doing while they've been gone? Resting. Now, this is important because notice now, these are the same guys that have just been going around healing, casting out devils, doing all manner of miracles. They just came back telling Him all the stuff that they've been doing, all this wonderful stuff. But it's amazing that when you go over the tired limit, when you finally get too tired to do anything, then all of a sudden nothing else matters. You don't care if people die in front of you. You just want them gone. You just don't want to deal with it anymore. If you don't get the proper rest, you will never be qualified for service. Let me show it to you this way. When Jesus says, let's go away, it isn't that He called all these people to a desert. Who was wanting to go to the desert? Jesus. Who followed Him to the desert? 5,000 people. He didn't ask them to come. He didn't want them to come. He didn't say, you need to come. He didn't say, look, I'm going to be hanging out here. If you got time, come on. He was trying to get away by himself. And as he did, all the people, when they saw him get in the boat, started running house to house and said, look, Jesus is headed over there. Let's go over there. Let's see what's going on. Let's see what He's doing. Hey, let's get to Him. All of a sudden, there in a desert place where He was going to spend time alone, He looks around and what does He see? Thousands of people. He looks at the disciples. And He says, look, we got to feed them. In fact, here's the way it simply goes. Verse 35, and when the days was now far spent, and the disciples came unto Him who are tired. And they said, this is a desert place. And now the time is far past. Send them away that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves some bread. For they have nothing to eat. I like the way the disciples do ministry. You know, we've enjoyed it. It's been a great service. But it's time for y'all to go. I mean, we like you and all, but you got to go. I mean, really, you got to go. And they're just saying, Jesus, will you just give that order? Will you stand it? Because people listen to you, Jesus. They don't listen to us. I mean, we've been trying to tell them. But will you stand up and tell everybody they need to go? And now Jesus looks at these tired disciples and He says, feed them. You feed them. Now, we always like to pick about Moses. We like to pick on Moses because he was in the desert and God told him to go back and he come up with all these excuses. But the disciples are pretty good at it too. Notice their excuses. First, where to buy? We don't have nowhere to buy all this food. There's nowhere in this desert to even be able to get them anything. We can't get them anything even if we wanted to. Second, it's time to eat. I work with a lot of people. And some people I enjoy working with and some people I don't. Most people don't enjoy working with me. Because here's the thing about me when I'm working. I don't take breaks because I don't smoke, so I don't have to take smoke breaks. I don't have to take dip breaks, whatever kind of breaks. I just keep walking by, filling my water as I'm working. When I'm working, because I have trained my body in fasting and different things like that, I don't have to eat. It's not necessary for me to eat. Now, don't get me wrong. If I finally sit down by the end of the day, I'm going to eat. But it's not like I at 10:45, my body says, can't work no more. I'm done. It doesn't function that way. And so sometimes I'm not the easiest person because I'm thinking, let's get it done. Let's get it done. Let's get it done. Or somebody else every few minutes is let's take a break. Let's take a break. Let's take a break. And I'm like, you can't finish if you take taking breaks. You got to keep pushing on. And notice what the disciple says. Look, we like them and all, but we're starting to get hungry too. It's time to eat and they need to go. And third, it's too expensive. Lord, we can't feed these people. You know how much money it costs for us to buy bread? Even if we could buy bread, you know how much money it would cost to buy bread? The next excuse was, we don't have anything. Because Jesus asked him, he said, well, what do you have? Because if you're rested and if you're thinking straight, you're going to think, well, what can I do? You ever hung around somebody like that, just so tired, and they'll say, I'm looking for this. And you walk over and say, here it is right here. Because they're in such a pace and such a race that they miss things. They don't notice things. You ever get like that when you're tired? You get forgetful. You start locking your keys up in the car. All kind of crazy stuff happens. Like leave your child at the house all by themselves when they're 2 years old. I don't know whoever did that, but I'm sure there's somebody who's done that other than me. I don't have anything, God. I don't have anything to give them. I don't have anything. You ever reach that point when you're doing ministry and you're so busy and tired in your own life that you look up, God, I don't have anything. I mean, I can't do anything for them. Oh, you couldn't take them to lunch? Oh, you couldn't just pick up the phone, that cell phone that's strapped to you most of the time? You couldn't just make one quick call and just tell them, hey, I'm praying for you? You couldn't do anything? But when you're tired, you don't think of little things. When you're tired, you don't think of that. When you're tired and not rested, it's hard to do service. I get picked at all the time. People tell me, you don't work but a day and a half a week. I'm like, yeah, but it's a tough day and a half. 2 hours on Wednesday, half a day on Sunday, that's it. That's the best job in the world, ain't it? If it just was that. Jesus is telling them, look, guys, you're going to have to take care of them. Finally, they just simply said, we don't have enough. All right, Jesus, we've done everything we can do. We even found a couple fish and some loaves of bread. We found a little something. But this is not going to feed all these people. Now listen to what rested can do. Rested can do what nothing else can do because it can put you into service. When I'm too tired, one thing about what Jesus says in these verses that caught me is this right here. it says that the disciples didn't and nobody else did, but Jesus had compassion on them. When you're rested, your emotions are working well. Your senses are working well. So Jesus is sitting there, He's rested, and He looks over those people and He says, "Y'all look like sheep without a shepherd." And compassion struck His heart. When they finally found some fish and bread, and they say, "We don't have enough. We don't have enough money. We don't have enough this. We don't have enough that. We just don't have enough." Jesus says, "Bring it to me. Tell everybody to sit down. Bring it to me." And He does the third thing that you can only do when you're rested and when you have a service heart. Listen to me. Hollywood prays. You'll have people, politicians, get on the news right before a hurricane's going to hit and say, "We all need to start praying." Don't do any good. It ain't going to do them a lick of good. You know why? Because first you have to be rested. You have to rest in Him. And when you've rested in Him, it's going to do something to you on the inside. It's going to give you a servant heart. You ain't going to want to be saved just so you can go party some more. You're not going to want to be saved just so you can go back to your sin anymore. You're going to have a servant heart. You're going to have a heart that loves people and would do anything for people. And Jesus, who's rested and who has a servant heart, does the third thing. He prays. What we do first is pray. Prayer ought to be the last thing and the most powerful thing you do. When I used to box and spar and do things like that, you didn't show up and just start doing this. I'm left-handed. So I didn't just show up and start doing this. Why? Because the goal was simply if I could ever hit them with my left hook, they were going down. So why didn't I just keep throwing left hooks? First, I have to rest. I have to serve long enough to get myself in the right place. Then at the right time, at the right moment, I do the most powerful thing I can do. See, the world doesn't see it that way. The world sees it as, "Well, let's just pray. Maybe something will happen." Oh, no, no. If I pray, something will happen. That's why we're not going to pray first. I go to a lot of houses, meet with a lot of people, and I just at the end of the session, "Well, God bless you." I have no intention of praying for them. They ain't going to do me no good. They ain't going to do them no good. I wish you understood what I was saying. Most of us want to start praying for things before we're prepared to pray for it. Jesus had to first get compassion for all those people. He first had to be rested enough to be able to handle a miracle that's fixing to turn these few loaves of bread, these few fishes, into enough to feed 5,000 people. That would take a lot of energy, a lot of spiritual energy. So He's rested, He's prepared, He's got compassion, and at the right moment, at the right time, when everybody's set and everything's done, all of a sudden, bam! I'm going to pray. "Father, thank You for what You're fixing to do." See, most of us in this room, we don't have a problem praying. We have a problem resting. We have a problem wondering if somebody asks us, "Well, why do you want God to do that? Why do you want God to heal you?" "Well, so I'll feel better." "For what?" "So I can go back and do what I want to do." It's going to be hard for God to move on that. See, once I get rested and I start realizing why I do what I do, why do I want God to give me strength? Why do I want God to answer my prayer? Why do I want God to do this? Then God shows up and says, "I'll do that." Some of us in this room, what we need to do more than anything else is we need to step back from our problem and our issue and our whatever, and we need to step back and we need to say, why do I actually want God to do something? Well, if God did it, what would it change? What would it change in me? What would it change in the person? What would it change in the situation? If God did it, is it so I get glory? So I get to look better? What is the purpose behind Him healing me? What is the purpose behind Him delivering? Why would God want to fix my marriage if I'm going to just go back and have another affair? Why would I want God to do that if I'm just going to treat her like dirt some more? First, I got to come up with my heart. When I step back from something, I'm able to look at it and say, God, here's what I really want to do. And then I can step in it in service and do all that I can do to make it happen. Let's just say it's me and Elise. First, I have to step back and I have to say, do I even want to be married to that woman? I mean, you have to ask hard questions. Do I really want to be married to her for the rest of my life? The rest of my life. Once I settle that answer, yeah. Here's why I want to be married. Because I want to see our kids grow up and I want to grow old with her. And I want to go on those trips we planned. And I want to do those things together. And there's things we talked about. I want to buy an RV together. And I want us to travel. And I want us to spend time. And who knows, I may one day talk her into living on a houseboat with me. And you just never know what God might do. I want to spend it with her. Now, I made that decision rested. So what it does is invokes my service. God, I'm gonna do my best. And I'm gonna love her, and I'm gonna. But you know what? She still drives me crazy. I still drive her crazy. Even though I'm serving, even though I'm trying, it's God. I'm telling you, I can't take much more of this. That's why the Bible says, doing all I know to do, ask whatsoever you will, and He will do it. Then when I kneel down and pray, and I say, Lord, I'm trying, but You got to help me be a better husband. You got to cure what's hurting inside of me. Help us have a great relationship. Help us. And then God does those miraculous things that I can't do. But it doesn't start by me just sitting down with the couch and the remote and saying, Lord, if You can help us, help us. I get tired of people coming for prayer a lot of times, and I worry more about their problem than they do. They don't really care about it. They just like to see if God do it. I mean, if He can, He can. If He don't, it's all right. I already got a plan B anyway. I'm dating somebody else on the side. I've been talking to that girl down there at work. So if it don't work out, I got a plan B. No, I'm talking about where there is no other plan. You're like, God, I need You to show up. I need You to do something. For some of you in this room today, this is the steps of your life. You know what you need to do before you get any seriouser in that relationship you're at? Before you decide what you're going to be the rest of your life, before you need to step back and rest. One of the greatest moments in our life that God gave me and Elise was this. We broke up. Rest. I've told this story 1,000 times. I met her. We dated for about a month. We just didn't click. I liked all the qualities about Elise. We just didn't click. And I'm like, God. So we broke up. I went off to Lee College to become a minister. I was going to be trained how to be a pastor. She went to college and went on through her stuff and worked in her degree. And she started dating different people and I was kind of closing the doors on different areas and realizing that, God, I don't need a plaque on the wall to be a pastor. God was settling things in me.
And I'll never forget when I met her the next time. I was back. I came back home, got a job. Hadn't seen her in 6 or 8 months. Of all the times, Erling Bowen, who runs an antique shop, said, "Tim, I'm going to go to a sale. I need you to stay here at the house and watch my stuff and sell it for me, you know, if the people come in." I loved antiques, so that was, oh yeah, I hang around here all day and look at your antiques. And so I was sitting inside, and I heard some cars outside, and I got up, and I was coming around the corner. And coming around the other way was this brownish-haired girl. Long, curly hair down to here. I mean, just took 2 hours to get hair to look like that. She had a pair of cut-off overall shorts with an orange shirt underneath it. I can tell you to the degree. I can tell you what her earrings looked like. I can tell you everything about it. She rounded that corner. I was rested. I was. My mind was clear. I didn't worry. I wasn't worried about school. I wasn't worried about how I was going to do this. My mind was red. God had got me to a place to where when He showed me the next thing, I wasn't going to miss it. I was rested. She was rested. She come around the corner. The rest is history. I had to chase off a few boys that was chasing her at the time, but other than that, it was all right. But without that time apart, we'd have never been able to stand back and realize if this is really what I want to give the rest of my life to. There's never a day in my life I don't wake up and know that I wouldn't trade her for the world. Why? Because I stood back and decided whether I would have ever traded her for the world. You have to step back and rest. And then you have to serve that thing that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're meant to have, you're meant to be a part of. Whether it's your kids, whether it's your family, whether it's whatever in your life, whether it's your job, whatever God's called you to, whatever you put your hands to, you're supposed to do it with all of your might as unto the Lord. So make sure what you put your hands to is something you know God's called you to. And then when you run out of yourself and you run out of strength and you run out of answers and you run out of anything, then you can look up toward heaven and say, "God, I know this is what I'm supposed to have. But you're going to have to help me hang on to it." Don't you think this sermon preached to those Romans at their time, don't you think it meant something? Think about their life. Nero was on the throne killing people. Nero was hanging them up on sticks and wrapping them in basically cloths and then dipping them in oil and then lighting it and watching them burn for his parties. Historians said he would put Christians all around like you'd hang out just lanterns and he would light them up and just let them burn. Could you imagine? If you were a Roman Christian at that time, you need someone to tell you, "Look, step back. Look at the big picture. Step back and look who you're following. Step back and look why you're serving. Step back and think about heaven. Step back and think of why I'm doing this." And then re-engage in service. And when you run out of yourself, you know this: He will be just one prayer away. Just one prayer. If you're in this place today, maybe that's where your next step is. Take the time to decide, okay, what does God want to do in my life? When you decide, you go at it with all you got. And when you get tired, then you just pray. The Bible says He's not slow to answer, but simply if two touching anything agreeing, He'll do it. I'm telling you, most of our life is lived so tired, not sure whether we're coming, we're going, not sure whether we're really supposed to be doing what we're doing, that we walk around with so little of faith.
and it drowns out the good that we try to do. Will you stand?